Floodwaters have been slow to recede in Pakistan. Its Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari told NPR his ancestral home is in the flood zone.
We had a 100-kilometer lake form in the middle of my country that can be seen from space.
Much of that lake is still there, and NPR's Dia Hadid went out on the water.
22-year-old Ikhtiar Sial crams his thin form into the hull of a boat that putt-putts across a lake. Just a month ago, this lake didn't exist. Now it's 70 miles wide, and a boat is the only way Sial can get around. The boat passes power lines that mark where the highway once ran, clusters of treetops where there were once fields. The boat skirts around submerged villages. Some have mosque domes poking out of the water. Hilly parts of Sial's village survived. It's called Gozol. It's now an island.
Only poor people are left in Gozol. Anybody with money left already.
Our boat parks at a muddy patch near a half-washed-away home.
Everyone's getting off here?
Yeah.
We follow Sial through ankle-deep water. We pass men on motorbikes navigating alleys slick with stinking sludge. We pass cows and buffaloes tethered in a dry courtyard. Sial says they belong to people whose homes were washed away. He says they're taking care of them until they can return. Displaced livestock and displaced people. Sial points to a girls' school where families are sheltering on the flat rooftop. Folks wave us off. The ground floor is underwater, so we climb a ladder fixed to the side of the building. A woman quickly sweeps the rooftop when she realizes guests are coming. It's over 100 degrees and one man, Muhammad Akram, invites us to sit near a fan powered by a solar panel. He rescued both from his home before floods submerged his village. It once neighbored Gozol. He tells my colleague Abdul Sattar that this was the closest place they could shelter.
But brother, we have got nothing. We borrow cash from relatives and friends.
It's the equivalent of a dollar here, a dollar there. It doesn't stretch very far. Akram's got six kids.
We ate a little today, but our stomachs aren't even half full. I had some bread. My neighbor gave me a cup of yogurt.
People who've been made homeless from the floods are so scattered that an official tells us it's difficult to reach small groups of them, particularly those on these little island villages in the lake. Officials want them to go to large tent encampments, but some families fear it's not safe for their women and girls. We say goodbye and climb back down the ladder. As we're leaving, we hear about residents who saved their own town from floodwaters by building their own embankment. The town's called Johi. It's also in the same large lake, so we flag down a boat in the jetty. We arrive in Johi and meet activist Alavario Samro. Samro says weeks into monsoon season, they saw government warnings on social media that floods were coming. They snapped into action.
We use social media. We use bike, we use rickshaw.
They told clerics to use mosque loudspeakers to amplify their call. Somro repeats what they said.
My
colleague Abdul Sattar translates.
You are informed that your city is at the risk and there could be flood. So this is not the time for sitting, this is not the time for resting.
Somro says residents knew what to do because 12 years ago, the area had also faced devastating floods and they built a similar embankment to save their town, but it had since fallen into disrepair. This time around, farmers bought tractors to shift soil. Elderly men and young boys helped with sandbagging. Women broke with conservative tradition and worked alongside the men. Another activist, Javed Rajhani, explains.
Everybody in the embankment, everybody, I told you from child to old man, will not give up our efforts to protect our city.
Local officials are among the residents who had fled Johi by then, but in phone calls, they authorized residents to use government machinery like big earth movers. Within days, townsfolk had rebuilt the 4.5-mile embankment, and they became folk heroes of the district. When they finished, the men held a party, dancing in traditional glittery caps and tossing rose petals. And when the heavy rains turned to floods, the embankment protected Johi, which is now encircled by water. Rajhani again.
We are in high spirits, and inshallah, if God forbids this situation comes like this, we will protect our city again.
But the joy and pride conceals anger.
There was a mismanagement, we can say, of the government.
Rajhani says the government didn't make rains more intense. He says that's climate change. But he and others maintain that the effects of these floods, which washed away so many homes and livelihoods, and even created a lake, was made worse because officials didn't maintain systems that would have diverted the water. We head back to the jetty and flag down another boat to return to what is now the mainland. These boats are basically a bus service set up by fishermen. There's no other way for residents on these isolated patches in the lake to get around, but it's expensive by local standards, about $1.30 a ride. And as we disembark at a noisy jetty, one furious commuter marches up to us. Gul Ahsa Nurani says the military should be providing free transport.
We want the army to provide us at least free ferry service so that we could travel. We don't have anything.
Pakistani officials say these floods were so catastrophic that they were overwhelmed. They say even much wealthier countries wouldn't have been able to cope. Pakistan's government is asking the West for more debt relief and aid so they can deal with this sprawling crisis, because scientists say climate change likely made these rains more intense, and Pakistan is only a minuscule global carbon emitter. Back on the boat to Gozo, the fishermen cut the motor briefly to fish out some weeds caught in the propeller. And that young man, Ikhtiar Sial, tells me in Pakistan, people like him are always left behind. There's nothing for the poor here, he says. We had to save ourselves. Dear Hadid, NPR News, Gozo.